It's time to make it count. We give professionals the knowledge, mindset, and habits to win at work and at home. I'm Freddie Bennett, Guinness World Record holder, business owner, adventurer, and author, giving you the tools to get unstuck, unshackled, and unleashed. The clock is ticking, so let's go and make it count. Welcome to another show-stopping episode of Make It Count. And today, folks, I've got a real treat for you. I am delighted to welcome who I would describe as a true powerhouse of the accounting industry. I have known this guy for quite some time now. I have huge respect for him. He is definitely one of my heroes in the accounting game, and he joins us from Australia. I am delighted to welcome, to Make It Count, Mr. Brad Turville. Brad, welcome to Make It Count.
Freddie, what an intro. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Brad, let's dive straight into it. For anyone who hasn't heard about you or what you do, tell us a bit about yourself and the roles that you play in the business.
Yeah, cool. So my name's Brad Turville. I'm a coach and consultant at a business called Modern Firm Practices. We help a whole lot of accountants around Australia and New Zealand with strategic planning and helping them run a better firm. And I'm also head of sales for The Gap in Australia. So head of sales in Australia for The Gap, a well-known Kiwi firm that's a business advisory platform for a lot of accountants around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. We are huge fans of The Gap here on Make It Count. And we will dive into both these roles and all of the awesome work that you do later on in the episode. But first, Brad, let's go back to the beginning. Have you got a background in the accounting industry? A rumor tells me that you used to be a full-time accountant. Is that correct?
Well, I've heard the saying, you can take the boy out of accounting, but you can't take accounting out of the boy. So I've still got a little acronym at the end of my name when I choose to use it, which is a fellow of the Institute of Public Accountants. I did get a master's in professional accounting, so I've ticked a few of those boxes off. I have been in practice, no longer in practice, but that's a lot of sort of the know-how I bring to the roles that I fill today. And the way I ended up sort of where I am right now was my father was an accountant and my grandfather was an accountant, and they both owned their own practices. So I guess I grew up, you know, having discussions around the family table of, you know, dad being at work and being a kid. I knew my dad was an accountant, but I could not tell you what that meant. And then you get a little bit older and you go through high school and started to fall, I guess, into those sort of subjects and learning those type of subjects around, you know, maths and advanced maths and economics and accounting and so on and so forth. And so I really got a early and easy ticket into the profession. I definitely didn't have to start at the mailroom and work all my way up. There's pros and cons with your dad owning his own firm is you can sort of come in straight at the top. And so, yeah, they gave me an early insight and probably a few steps ahead, but also getting an understanding of what it's actually like running a smaller suburban practice.
Mm.
And so that's how I guess, fell into it. If I went back in time and I didn't have a family in accounting, would I have done accounting? I'm going to say likely not, but that's the path that presented itself.
Interesting. What would you have done if you hadn't taken the accounting route?
Well, I'll give you an example. So at high school years or teenage years, I was crawling under cars on weekends, working on cars, servicing cars, going to car events. I've got the Grand Prix booked in shortly to go along to it. So I'm going to say something in that field. I'll give you an example. So at school, I probably wasn't the best student at school. And so you sort of see this on the movies, but I did it in real life. I would have a car magazine inside the textbook. So a teacher at the front would look like I'm reading a textbook, but I'm really reading how to rebuild a small block Chev as I was sort of sitting through English or something like that during high school. So probably something down that route.
Nice. I love it. And I always love it when we can destroy the stereotype of accountants always following the rules and never getting into any trouble. And really, we're all rebels at heart, really. We're very rebellious, but very intact and on point when it comes to numbers, obviously.
Well, I think that's why I've ended up in sales now. So going through accounting and learning a lot and coming at the other side, an accountant turned business and sales coach, can definitely let the Rebel fly in the sales space.
Definitely. And I'm super excited about coming onto the sales space, because we know that is a hot and an ongoing topic for the accounting and advisory industry. I wanted to focus for a second still on the family business. And firstly, how is it working with a family member such as your father? Do you feel the pressure? Is it a match made in heaven? How does that all run?
No, not at all. It was almost come to fisticuffs every day. Myself and my dad very much butted heads. We're probably very similar. So we're quite stubborn. He'd been in the trade a long time. I'm a young startup in my 20s. You think you know everything. And then you get a little bit older and you actually realize how much you don't know. Mm. But look, having sort of access to working with a partner and owner of a firm quite early on, I was able to absorb a lot. But I also didn't understand a lot of why accountants and a lot of friends and family and colleagues of ours that owned other practices, why they ran their practice a certain way. And I quickly had different sort of beliefs around what they could do differently. And it seemed like a little bit of a sea of sameness. So that was the early days for me before I started my own practice and far away from doing what I do now, starting to question the industry and how they do things and why hasn't really been shaken up yet.
Mm. I think that's a really great point about shaking things up. But it's interesting. You always have the contrast there between the generations when I think it's a metaphor for the industry as a whole. We have some quite traditional players, should we say, who believe it's always been done a certain way and it's always going to be done a certain way. And then we have people with a more progressive, more forward-looking mindset, as you just described yourself there. And do you think it can be difficult to work together in terms of melding those two perspectives?
I think you need to be open to new ideas. Mm. That's my take. I think you're either evolving or you're not. There's no in the middle. You know, so if you sort of look at, I guess, take the book Atomic Habits, that 1% improvement every day, what the outcome will be over 12 months versus, you know, doing nothing or decreasing by 1% every day. And so I think any sort of great business is just open to new ideas. Mm. And I think some of the luxuries in the accounting industry can also work against you. So you can somewhat rest on your laurels with maybe a sort of false confidence that we can charge this much, the clients are going to come back every year, and we can, you know, what we pay our team members, and we bundle all that up into a bit of a business model that works quite well and can spit out some quite good profit and strong cash flows. Why would we do anything different? And if I sort of go back in time a little bit, there then started to be a little bit of a different trend. I'm thinking when I started my practice, this thing called Xero would come along. Mm. And I thought, hang on, I've got a feeling here there's going to be a bit of a shakeup and a bit of a change. And if I get it wrong, I'm young and dumb enough to sort of knock on the door of mum and dad and go, I got it wrong. I need a bed to sleep in. Mm. But, you know, that was, call it maybe 15 or just less years ago, mm. You know, and what sort of change has happened in the industry over that time. I remember having to sell Xero to a client and why would I want to change to it? And now the power is in the client going to the accountant going, surely you guys can help me with Xero. The whole tables have turned.
It's a really interesting paradox. I think you're right. It highlights the shift there. And you also touch on a theme that has reared its head a few times over the many episodes of Make It Count that we've had now, which is something around backing yourself and betting on yourself. Because as you described then, you had this inkling that Xero was going to be quite a game changer in the industry. And then you obviously backed yourself, you bet on yourself that would be right. In these kind of strategic business decisions, did you ever face any self-doubt, any nerves, any kind of feeling of, oh, you know, I'm making this decision, but I could be getting things really wrong?
Oh, 100%. And still today, not just back then. I mean, that still goes on. You know, so for me, that doesn't go away, but I now make the decision and I just push through. And I think sometimes that self-doubt or nervousness can sometimes be confused with sort of excitement. And so that's the way I take it, that there's going to be a bit of a breakthrough. It's big, it's important. I should be feeling like this because we're shaking it up and changing things a little bit. So no, it doesn't go away. And I know a lot of accountants I work with feel like that. And especially I'm big on setting your expectations. So if it's the first time that you've done it, of course, there's going to be nerves. Of course, you're not going to nail it like you're going to do it the 100th time. But even getting through to that 100th time, you know, there still might be a little bit of nerves of going out on a stage or pitching a big job or changing things up. And I think that's just life.
Mm. No, I totally agree. And I am. Yeah, I've read it's if you're feeling those nerves or those excitement, the excitement tingling, or if you're feeling a bit like an imposter, take it as a signpost that you're actually on the right path because you're stepping outside of your comfort zone and you are doing something difficult and nervous and scary. But it doesn't mean it's the wrong thing. It means we're taking the path towards growth.
Yeah, I agree. And I've checked in sort of with a few mentors and a few people that I look up to, especially I'm starting to do a lot more speaking from stage and I love doing it. And I think it's important to model people that you look up to and you think about a mindset like B do have. I want to see, you know, who are they? If that's who I'm modeling, how could I be a little bit like them? Like what would Freddie do in this situation? How would he act? How would he respond? And so on and so forth, and modeling those behaviors. But I think what's funny is I've checked in with a few people where I see them speak and think, wow, if I could do a 10% as good as them, that would be amazing. And they get the nerves before they go on. All the things we just spoke about, they're just one of us as well. So you can sometimes idolize, you know, certain people, but then if you ever just chat to them, they're just like you and me, and they've got the same ups and downs and feelings and so on and so forth.
Definitely. I 100% agree. And I think the other part of that is that most people, no matter how good they are now, as in your example, seeing them on stage, when they started off, they were terrible. And with every time we all start something new, whether it's a new role at work, leadership position, speaking career, a podcast, for example, we're usually pretty terrible at the start, but it's about then going back, that consistency, putting in the reps, going again and again and again. That's how we go from bad to good and from good to great.
I agree. And it's great to reflect on. So I saw a guy at an event I was speaking at last week, and he did a program with me about 9 months ago. And since then, he has sold and delivered 23 business plans. Amazing. In that period. And we were reflecting on this, and he said, which firstly is a great feat. Mm. And secondly, he said, I now reflect back on those first one or two or three I did and almost cringe at how bad they were, you know, compared to number 24 and 25 that he's probably just about to do. But he had to do 1, 2, and 3 to get to 23, 4, and 5. That's just the process and the journey. So you just need to go on it.
Exactly. And I 100% agree. When it comes to anything around, for accountants, as you say, client conversations, sales, running meetings, delivering strategy workshops, it's always going to be difficult at the start. But the key point is not to quit, just taking every step forward. And I wanted to ask you as well, Brad, we've talked about stepping out of comfort zones and pushing through times of nervousness and excitement. Walk us through what was going through your mind and kind of the inkling that was coming up through your brain when you started to think, maybe I don't want to run my own practice forever. Maybe I want to go in a different direction. How did that all come about?
I think it came early on in practice, and I started to mold the practice a certain way. And I think just over time, the direction started to show for me. So I remember, we'll go back to say 2010, 2011, I went on a trip with a few mates to the States, and I remember being in New York, and I went to a famous bookshop called the Strand Bookstore, and I saw this book on the shelf called The 4-Hour Work Week. And I thought, that sounds like the sort of week that I want to be working. And I hadn't delved too much sort of into that space of reading business books and courses and coaches and things like that much at that particular point. And I remember reading that book, and it's almost just like cracked my mind open just to a different way of thinking. Now, some of the things there, I think it's still a great staple book to read, but some of the things that were in that book now are very much more commonplace, especially probably the virtual assistant or removing yourself and doing things you enjoy and so on and so forth. But that probably started the journey of thinking a bit differently. I then started hiring coaches and going to events and reading different books and almost getting myself as much out of the accounting space as possible, because a lot of it was just technical related. So there was X amount you had to do to keep up your technical side, but I was more focused on sales, marketing, product development, leadership, how different business models work, what could I learn from a manufacturing business that could be applied to our, that excited me. But I also thought, I don't know why other people aren't thinking like this, and is it just me? So I always had that curious sort of mindset. And what I also learned in practice was I wasn't the first to put my hand up and say I was the best accountant. I wasn't the best, I wasn't the worst. But what I found was that there was a couple of hidden areas that most firms were quite weak at. One was client experience. The other two was sales and marketing. So I started to really explore this idea of what would a great client experience look like, and better yet, what is the experience clients are getting from your average firm that's out there, and how can we just be that little bit better? And one of the big things we put in there was things like turnaround times. And that we built a bit of a business model that just around being so fast and getting back to people, others just could not compete. And when I thought about the tech side, like, I can't compete with the big four. Like, they've been doing it forever. They love it. They've got so many resources and so on. I can't compete on that, but we could get back to you and be so helpful that we'd be struggle to catch our tail there. And then I joined a digital marketing community because I didn't know anything about it. And then I got a sales coach as well. So that was very left of field. But just getting a little bit better in sales and marketing and improving the client experience became a big differentiator. And then I ended up sort of falling in love with the sales side. I just happened to have this really deep understanding of the industry and how accountants think and what's actually involved in running a practice and in the intricacies and so on and so forth.
What I love about that is that the fact that you defined your goal, you defined, here's the direction that I want my business to go in, here's the direction that I want my career, my life to go in. And then it was a case of saying, what skills do I need? Okay, so it's about client experience, sales, marketing, digital, and so on. And then say, well, how do I solve this problem and get those skills? When so often I believe that we trip ourselves up, and we'll probably come on to this, but we say things like, I'm not a natural salesperson, I'm terrible with technology, I'm not a creative person. We tell ourselves these stories, and then we just give ourselves a get out of jail free card, which means we can never win the game. It's by saying, look, where am I not great at, and how do I fix this problem? I believe we don't have to tell ourselves these stories of permanence, that I am not a natural something, or I'm not good at something else. And it sounds like that investing in yourself really has paid off.
100%. And I am definitely not a natural born salesperson. So if you ask my mum, what was I like as a kid? I did not want to answer the home phone. If I went out and someone was sort of trying to sell something or do a survey, that was my worst nightmare, having to talk to someone like that. And now I'm up on stage and getting front of house and training others on just some basic foundational sales best practices. So can it be learned? Yes. Also, I know I just rattled it off like that was easy. There were plenty of ups and downs. And I think going through it, you do make a whole lot of great decisions and you do a whole lot of stuff ups, but either way, you learn as you go. And a sales coach, a friend of mine, Dave, who's sort of coached me for many years now, he finds it, there was a period where he found it hilarious, but I guess now he sort of loves the idea of where we started, of me just having no idea, through to now seeing, he'll see stuff on LinkedIn and go, I just can't believe the transformation you've gone through. So I think if you really want to do it and you have a crack at doing it and you put yourself in the right environment, so I think environment dictates performance, that's 100% a big stepping stone. And now, you know, it used to be local. So I sort of think back to, you know, when my dad would have started his practice, everything was local. There was no internet. You had to hire local team members in a local office, and you could only bring on local clients. Now, you know, the sort of that term global, which is the globe, is now local to you. So if you want to be in a niche community of sales experts just in the accounting industry, there's going to be a group out there that you can find. You can go and seek out the resources. But another distinction there would be, there's no lack of information. So you can go and jump on Google or jump on AI and search for anything, but that doesn't equal the result. That's the starting point. But taking action, and I don't need to talk to you about this, Freddie, but that's the big point, because anyone could go and find, chuck into ChatGPT or the like, you know, a sales process in an accounting firm. Where should I start? How would I tackle this objection? So on and so forth. But it's then taking the action and actually doing it, which sounds like the 1%, and it is, but it's actually the 99%.
Definitely. No, I fully agree with that. And I'd love to get your view on this as well. I mean, I'm a big fan and an increasingly big fan of imperfect action. And I believe, obviously, I know we both work with different accounting practices as our clients, as part of our businesses. And one of the things that I say is that you can teach someone the perfect knowledge. Let's use sales as an example, that the perfect things to say, the perfect systems, the perfect processes, all the strategy, all of the textbook stuff. But unless they're willing to actually pick up the phone or step into a meeting and have the conversation, then all that knowledge isn't going to be used. And again, I always believe that nothing is a greater teacher than that imperfect action. Someone having 100 client meetings is going to learn so much more than just if they sit in a room on their own and just read books about having client meetings. It has to be taking those steps forward every single time.
Yeah, I agree. And there's that saying, to know and not to do is really not to know.
Mm.
And I met with someone this morning, and what I said to her was, if you're wanting to learn how to play tennis, you could sit there and read books all day long, but nothing's going to beat just getting out on the court and hitting a few balls around.
Definitely.
And so I, a bit like you, will encourage people to do that probably a lot sooner. And I think about, you know, anyone that's had any sort of, I guess, sort of surgery in a hospital, they pretty much get you up straight away to do rehab.
Mm.
And anyone listening that's had this is going to get, it feels way too, it's like, hang on, but I've just been in surgery. Like, surely we should be waiting a week. And they're up and you think, but that's the best practice. That's the way to really sort of heal and get ahead. That same idea sort of applies to trying anything new or getting certain results.
Mm.
If that's what it feels like, do it. Just get out there and do it.
Oh yeah, I've been on both sides of the fence. I've had that with my clients, and I've said it myself as well. Back in my professional career, but certainly my practice career, you know, I was there saying, we tend to reject ourselves because that's easier than facing rejection from someone else. So we'll say something like, I won't phone them up because I'm sure they won't answer at this time, or I'll do that meeting on Monday, or I'll do something else, or they won't say yes. And we are amazingly good at giving ourselves excuses to not take the action that we know we need to take.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of it behind the scenes is we're worried what other people are going to think of us, right? But the irony with that is everyone else is too worried about what everyone else is going to think of them. They're not actually thinking of you.
Definitely. No, it's so true. We all, that's probably a whole other podcast about how so many of our actions or our inactions are driven by shame. It's because we're scared of being embarrassed, of people laughing at us, of looking stupid, all these things. Because back in our cave person days, if we were laughed at or not part of the group, then we got eaten by the saber-toothed tigers. So we all do these things to try and not look stupid. But really, I think it's the only stupid decision is not taking the action that we know we should take.
Yeah, look, I think most people are sitting on a mountain of knowledge and they just don't know it.
Mm, definitely. I think everyone is, everyone's a superhero, but sometimes they need to be able to don their cape and understand that they do have superpowers. I always say accountants, advisors in particular, you can see things other people can't see. You can do things other people can't do. Sometimes you just have to step into that power and realize that you can fly. And speaking about flying, let's dig a bit deeper into what you do in your business and how you help accountants today. What would you say is the main problem that accountants right now are coming to you with, and how do you help them solve it?
I just think they're not clear on the type of business that they want to build. Mm. So a lot of them have a business that has just been built by circumstance and they've been reactive for a number of years. And they've got a lot of clients, they've got a lot of services, they've just attracted a certain amount of team members, they've got busy, we've hired. And, you know, it's a bit of a mixed bag and it's not always delivering, you know, what it is that they want. In fact, the first question is, what is it that you want? And a lot aren't really clear on that. Some know what they don't want, but they're not clear on just basic planning. Where are you now? Where do you want to be? What do we need to change to get there? And some of those changes aren't always going to be a whole lot of fun. because you've got to sometimes break a few eggs to bake the cake. But, you know, I see now, I'm seeing a little bit of a movement now of working closer with a smaller number of clients, properly servicing them, just ideal types of clients. What do those services look like? Attracting resources from not just locally, but consultants around the country, offshoring. I would say this would be a given, but it's not always. Just making sure you've got tech best practice in place as well. You can sort of online, you'll see there can be a bit of a feeling that surely that's down pat, and I'll speak to a firm and, you know, their 20 years has sort of gone by and it seems like they haven't implemented anything. So it still is a little bit of a mixed bag that's out there. But, yeah, the biggest problem is they're just not clear on what it is that they want. And then is the business delivering on that for you? And, I mean, this is a universal question to any business, not just, I think accountants need to remember, they're just in business like their clients are in business.
It's true. And for so many years, that tiny, simple four-word question, what do you want, used to terrify me because it sounds so simple. And you say to someone, I challenge the listeners right now to be thinking, what do you actually want? Because it's easy to say time freedom, money freedom. Yeah, more time, more money. That'd be great. But if you really drill down into what do you want and why do you want it, then it is not an easy question to answer. I think you're right. So many accountants and accounting practice owners really struggle with that.
I agree. And it can be hard to self-diagnose yourself sometimes. So I just was talking to a guy last week that I'm going to do some planning work with, and he's a little bit all over the shop, and he's sort of got a few avenues he can go down, and they're all good-looking avenues. And he's getting a little bit in his own way and overcomplicating the whole thing, and that was very apparent in just a quick 15-minute call. But just creating a bit of space to work through it all and see what is important, especially in this example, what's important for him and his family, and how do we structure the business so it can best serve what you want as an individual and as a family. And I don't think a lot of accountants or a lot of partners go to that level, and they almost take it as if it's all set in concrete that I can't get rid of these clients, I can't change this, I've got to work on the weekends. You know, I've always got the saying, you don't have to do anything. You know, you get to choose your own adventure, and you're choosing to continue on with the one that you're on. If you want to completely do a 90 degrees, and you can do it right now, you can do it at any point in time, but you need to be open to it. And you can restructure and remodel your business however and whenever you want.
Quick pause to tell you something that I am so excited about. I have launched the Professional Superheroes Mastermind Group. This is where professionals work directly with me to develop the knowledge, habits, and mindset to get unstuck, unshackled, and unleashed at work and at home. There is nothing like this on the planet. It is mind-blowing how much fun this is and just how big a shift people are experiencing. We turn you into the professional superhero that you were always meant to be. If you want more information and to join, then drop me an email at hello@freddiembennett.com. That's hello@FREDDIEM for mindset, BENNETT.com. I can't wait to see you in there. Now, let's get back to the episode. Definitely. And I hear this a lot from my clients as well. And I think I'm interested as an open question whether this is particularly prevalent in the accounting industry or just business owners in general, as you say. I think maybe it's because in the accounting industry, we feel like a lot of pressure to get things 100% right, because that's obviously what our jobs and everything rely on, around accuracy. But I believe there's a pressure in terms of making the right decision. Like I have accounting firm owners who might either be looking at a new strategic direction or maybe selling the business or selling part of the business. And they're kind of saying, I could do option A, I could do option B, I could do option C, I could do something, but I'm not sure what's the right thing to do. But I personally believe that there's no such thing as a right decision. It's the action that you take after the decision that determines whether it's the right decision or not. Is that something you found at all? Or
yeah, I agree. And you're not always going to make the right decisions. Anyone listening that has taken on a client before or hired a team member before is going to know you're not going to get it right for a whole lot of different reasons.
Definitely.
And so, I mean, if you look at something like marketing, which can be a little bit foreign for a lot of accountants, marketing is basically just doing a whole lot of experiments to see what works and what doesn't work, and stop doing the stuff that doesn't work, more of what works, and try some new stuff and keep iterating and going from there versus perfectionism. And I'm one to sort of put my hand up here going, that's something I've had to work on as well, wanting to always nail it. That's definitely something that's sort of ingrained in a lot of accountants. And I think it's just because a lot of the work that we do is sort of always 1 through to 10 and 1 plus 1 equals 2 versus when you're looking at things like advisory or business improvement, there is no one right way. And thinking of another call I had earlier today, someone was going to go into a conversation with one of their clients, and they didn't say it like this, but there was a bit of an angle that they were going in with a bit of a product push, and they think this is the best for the client versus going in and asking a whole lot of questions and finding out what's most important, what do they want. And what ended up happening was they sold a cash flow project, which was the most important pressing need and what the client wanted, and the problem there to be solved. Definitely. And so they probably would have got, you know, the client would have got a bit upset, and the accountant would get a bit frustrated that they couldn't have got this business plan sale over the line. But that's because they were going in with the wrong mindset and the wrong intention versus just being open and asking me, should I sell them cash flow or should I sell them business planning? I don't know. You have to go in and have a conversation. And if you aren't going to ask the right questions and then ask, you know, what would you like to fix? Where do we go to from here? The right solution will come to light. You just need to chill a little bit, ask the questions, but don't go in with that sort of fixed idea, which I know anyone in probably early stages of doing something new, especially when putting their sales hat on, when they maybe haven't had any training or they've got a particular idea around what a sales process needs to look like, you can default to product pushing. And I'd rather just go in open-minded. Here's a thought experiment for a lot of listeners. The next time a client calls up with a question and you don't know the answer, just say, I don't know the answer. You don't need to know the answer. I don't need to give you permission for that. Like, there's no expectation. You're just putting that expectation on yourself, and it's an unfair expectation.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think we come from this world of being an insecure overachiever when people don't realize just how much expertise and knowledge they have between their ears. But they can sometimes, I say they, but I also mean myself in this as well, we can handicap ourselves by saying, I need to be the expert. I need to be seen as the trusted advisor. I need to have every answer to every question at my fingertips. But people and clients, they don't want to have a relationship with a robot or an encyclopedia. They want to have a relationship with the person. And part of being an engaging, trustworthy, open person, building open relationships, I probably shouldn't say it that way in terms of open relationships, building powerful client relationships, is it's about being vulnerable and about being willing to say, you know what, I don't know, but I'd love to find out.
Yeah, you definitely need to ask, shut up and ask more questions and be curious about the client, and then just offer the help. Like, I'm not here to turn you into a salesperson. I mean, I love the saying, stop selling, start helping. All you need to do is offer the help. And especially when it comes through to, you know, advisory, whether it's business or tax advisory or corporate advisory or whatever you're delivering, you need to lead your clients. And to be able to do that, think like a doctor, where they will diagnose, and they'll do that by asking a whole lot of questions and maybe doing some tests and sending you away and getting you, and then they can prescribe. So I think a lot of the time, if you're just giving a client knee-jerk response answers, then that's doing them a disservice, because how can you possibly know every option scenario off the top of your head for that particular client, for that particular financial year, with those particular... It's not possible. It's like someone calling you up and saying, how long's a piece of string? And you go, 30 centimeters. So it's, we need to ask more and find out what's going on there. So, you know, there's a great mindset, Freddie, that you and I both know, which is called the ops mindset. And in an example like that, it's what's the problem or the opportunity that's presented itself. Instead of blurting out a response, so instead of someone standing in the Toyota dealership going, I want to buy the new Hilux, how do I structure the finance? What entity do I buy it in? How do I this? How do I that? Just pause, present what that next step should be, which is, don't call me from the dealership there trying to get an answer in 1 second. What's the value, and what should those next steps look like? And then state your price and shut up.
100% agree. And I think, as you say, with your doctor analogy, people don't make a doctor's appointment just to walk in, have the doctor say, here you go, that's it, off you go, there's your prescription, because you wouldn't feel listened to. You wouldn't feel like your problem is being solved by an expert. And to flip it as well, doctors are also very good at not giving away their time away for free. Doctors are powerful at saying, you're going to come and meet me at my office at this time. Here's when the meeting starts. Here's when the meeting stops. Here's the next steps. And there's probably going to be a bill to pay on the way out, because that's how we actually solve your problem. And that's how you get the right level of advice. You can have free advice, or you can have valuable advice, but usually it's the valuable advice that fixes your problem in the long term.
I was presenting in Brisbane last week on stage, and someone asked a question, how do I stop, you know, clients calling me on the weekend? And I had a couple of direct ways of handling that. But the way I suggested it was what you said there about the doctor. When do you ever call the doctors and get through to the doctor?
Mm.
Never. If you try to call a doctor on the weekend and the clinic's not open, you're not talking to anyone. You're waiting till next week, and then you get reception, and then they're going to book you in, and there is structure and discipline and a process, and you're just allowing everything to slide. So definitely setting some discipline and setting some boundaries around that, because sometimes, and listeners will know, you give a client an inch, they're going to take a mile. So you need to nip that in the bud, and it's your business. Remember, you choose your own adventure. You set the expectation.
Definitely. And yeah, clients treat us the way that we allow them to treat us. Clients will push the boundaries as much as we allow them to push the boundaries. So often our lives and our businesses are the result of what we're prepared to tolerate. And the sooner, I believe, accountants understand, as you so rightly say, they can make the rules, they can set the boundaries, they can choose how this story is going to go, then they will find their business and their careers so much more powerful, productive, and enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree.
Love it. Brad, let's look to the future, because time is flying as we're having fun and we're veering towards the end of the show. But I'd love to get your view on the future of the accounting industry, the future of accountants' careers. What do you think successful accountants and accounting practices are going to have to be focusing on in the months and years ahead?
I reckon if they go back and jot down a few things I mentioned today, they'll be set in good stead. They'll be putting a plan in place around what is it that you want to build, and that'll be quite different from what you've got right now, but laying those tracks backwards as to the changes that you need to start to be implementing to get you from A to B. That's going to be one. I think tech is always going to continue to advance. So AI is a big hot topic at the moment. And I think about when I started my practice and Xero would come along, BankLink was around before that. But I remember sort of overnight a stack of bank statements and with a ruler and a pencil and a calculator going through line by line, having to plug those transactions into the system. Suddenly, all those transactions overnight were just in the system. And so that whole chunk of work was just gone. And so sometimes it can be hard to visualize those big things happening. I think that's only going to continue happening in the technology space. So what is AI going to do? I know some firms that have built their own in-house AI that can take the delivery of year-end work almost all the way through to review stage, which is going to be single digits to sort of 10 to low teens of hours of work, every job gone. And they're now working on how do we create a system that does the review for us. So something like that is to happen, and listeners might think that's not going to happen overnight. Well, okay, it might not, but I think it's a good thought experiment to have, to go, what if that was to happen? What would we then do? How would we then redeploy our time, redeploy our skills? What are we going to do? How do we need to evolve our business model and our business plan? And just get in early and start to think, what if these things were to happen? Where would it go? Because I think tech is not slowing down. You know, I remember, Freddie, you'd be like me when we were in high school, you know, mobile phones, a commercial, everyone having a phone probably really just came around, let alone I would have probably been out of school about 5 or 6 years when the first iPhone came out. I think I was about 23 or 24 when that came out. And I remember lining up for it and just going, there's so much technology in my pocket just overnight. The phone before it, you could play Snake on it and do basic text messages. And now basically a whole laptop is in this phone. things have only sped up since then. That's only going to speed up. So that would be one. But I'll put a caveat on this. I don't think anything is going to replace the personable experience. So use tech, embrace tech, but don't hide behind it. So use digital signing, use online document management, use Zoom, use all the flash stuff, but don't hide behind the email. Don't try and make it a seamless experience without any humans involved. I feel like your family groups and your business client groups are going to want more of a personal experience, and all the tech and the advancement should make that easier. That would be my insights.
I cannot disagree with any of that. I think you're totally right. Technology is going to go faster and faster and faster, which paradoxically means the human touch, the secret sauce, the human element of the expertise that accountants can provide will be even more important. And I know that's why you do such an amazing job, Brad, changing the businesses and the lives of accountants and accounting firms, not only in Australia, but also in New Zealand and on a bigger scale as well. Brad, we're coming to the end of the episode now. I knew this was going to be a good conversation, but it's been an absolute pleasure. I've loved your insights. I always learn so much every time you talk. We obviously do have one more question for you, which is the tradition here on Make It Count, where the outgoing guest gets to set a secret question for today's guest. And that guest, Brad, obviously is yourself. So the secret question I have, that I haven't actually read either. Okay, this is going to be an interesting one. It's a double parter or a triple parter, but here we go. Imagine this is your 80th birthday. Who will be there with you? And what tribute statement would you like them to make about your past? I'll say that one more time. Imagine this is your 80th birthday. Who will be there with you? And what tribute statement would you like them to make about your past? It's a deep one. I prefer the one that's like, what's your favourite cake? But we're going to go deep with this one. What do you reckon to that?
All right. I would say that's an easy one, but it is a good question. I would say the sort of people that will be there will be my wife, it'll be my kids, and it'll be my grandkids. And I think the best statement I could leave was, you were the best husband, father, and grandfather to us. That's when I think about how I'm designing my life and designing my business model, it is around that. It's been there for my family, it's been there for kids, having discretionary time, being the fun dad. And it's not always easy trying to get the balance and make it all work, but that's what I'm working towards. If I could get to that point and they're all there and I could strive to be that person, that's what excites me.
I love that. And I totally agree. I think that really highlights also that what is most important in our lives and our businesses. And I know when we get to that 80th birthday party, hopefully I've got an invite as well. And I know the accounting industry is certainly going to be saying that you are the global legend. So and it's going to be an amazing to see the next steps of your journey as well, Brad. Speaking of which, I know so many people will have got so many pearls of wisdom from this episode. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to get in touch, how do they find you?
Cool. Shoot over to bradturville.com. That's my personal website. Sign up to the Modern Firm newsletter that goes out every week, sharing a few pearls of wisdom like I have today on running a modern firm. But also on socials, I'm pretty hot on LinkedIn. So if you're not already connected, connect with me at Brad Turville on LinkedIn.
Perfect. And we'll put all those links in the show notes. You know, I'm on your mailing list. I enjoy getting your emails. And they do always entertain and educate me every week, which is it's always a pleasure to receive them. But obviously, we know we're big fans of The Gap here on Make It Count. And you do some amazing work, both behind the scenes at The Gap and with Gap members. And I know so many people appreciate your expertise in that area. Brad, for now, it has been a pleasure. As I say, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I know so many people will be reaching out to you. Thank you for everything you do and the expertise you bring to the industry. And thank you for being part of Make It Count.
Thanks for having me, Freddie.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to another show-stopping episode of Make It Count. I would love it if you could give us a 5-star review, subscribe, and share this podcast with the world. I am on a mission to get professionals unstuck, unshackled, and unleashed at work and at home. You can join our free Make It Count community. Click the link in the show notes. And you can also follow all of my adventures on Instagram at the Freddie Bennett. Well, for now, we made it count once again. I've been Freddie Bennett. You have been amazing. And I will see you on the other side.